This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. Today we're going to be talking about the World Social Forum, and with me to kick it around is Elizabeth DiNovella, the culture editor of The Progressive, my colleague, who attended the Social Forum in Caracas in January. Liz, what is the World Social Forum?
Well, the World Social Forum started back in the year 2001. I think actually the best place to start would be 1999 in the battle in Seattle, when people gathered from all over the country, literally, in Seattle when the World Trade Organization were having their meetings. And as people may remember, there were huge demonstrations and hundreds of people were arrested. And it was the first time there was sort of a massive demonstration against the World Trade Organization in the U.S. And I think that really marked a turning point in this larger, what you could say, a global social movement that is anti-corporate power and I think also anti-imperialist.
Were you in Seattle? I was told I was going to go, that it was going to be something big, and cynical me said, it's just another protest, I'm staying home.
No, I knew it was going to be something big, but I stayed at WORT where I was working, our community radio station, and pressed the buttons to get all the information in. But we knew something was going to go on. But I think it's very important to talk about Seattle because it was the first time, again, where economic policy was suddenly a part of the national debate as a protest, because for years and years, people who have been involved in solidarity movements with Latin America or in other regions knew that, sure, the Civil War ended in El Salvador in 1992, but it was very clear that the next stage was happening, and that was going to be this issue of economics. And so for many people to see people in Seattle in 1999 taking the streets for economic policy, to me personally, I never thought I'd see that happen, and that was really amazing. And so the World Social Forum sort of gathers together all the sort of groups that gathered in Seattle. You have people who are fighting for water rights. You have people who are fighting for reproductive rights. All different types of social movements come together. And the first World Social Forum happened in 2001 in Porto Alegre, Brazil, which is a southern port town not too far from the very southern part of Brazil. And what happened is that the Workers' Party, which is actually Lula's party, who's the president of Brazil, their party came into office in Porto Alegre, and they decided that they were going to do things that would allow more citizen participation. So one of the things they decided to do was to have a participatory budget where 15% of the city's budget would be voted upon by people in the city. And out of this movement of participatory budgets and out of the Workers' Party came this idea of where we want to host the World Social Forum. And it'll be a place where people can get together and exchange ideas and compare tactics about how to make this world a better place. And so that's how the first World Social Forum started.
And you weren't at that one, were you?
No, I was not. And I believe that was in 2001.
But you have been to one prior to the one you just went to.
Right. There was one in 2001, and there were 20,000 people there. And then they had another one in Porto Alegre in 2002 with 50,000 people. And then they had one in 2003 with 100,000 people. And then they had one, then they moved it to India in 2004. And then in 2005, they went back to Brazil with 150,000 people. And I was at the one in 2005 in Brazil.
And Elizabeth DiNovella, culture editor of The Progressive, just back from the World Social Forum, this one in Caracas. How was the one in Brazil?
Well, the one in Brazil, again, took place in Porto Alegre, although interestingly enough, the Workers' Party, which was the political party that was in power that started off the forums, they were no longer in power, actually. They were thrown out of office in an election, and they actually had a more conservative party in place.
Locally,
and for the city. However, people didn't seem to mind hosting it because so many people come, and I'm sure that while the city spends money providing housing and transportation, they also must make some money off of it, just having so many people. So I was at the one last year in 2005 in Porto Alegre, Brazil. And one of the things that was striking about what the Brazilians did is that they were able to have amazing translators who translated in all these different languages. And it may not seem like translators are such a big deal. However, in the World Social Forum that just happened in Caracas, there wasn't as many translators and it wasn't as well coordinated. And so if you didn't speak Spanish, then you had a harder time getting around. Where last year it was just the language barriers were not as present, which is important if you're having all these people coming from all over the world.
And it's how global is the World Social Forum? How many countries are represented, for instance?
Well, the one last year had 149, and this is according to the World Social Forum's own statistics.
149 countries.
Yeah, that's what they said. I don't know. They're just starting to come out with the numbers for the social forum that just happened. But overwhelmingly, the most of the people are from Latin America, the ones that have been in Brazil that has happened. Now, a couple years ago when they moved the social forum to India, they had people from, I think, only 100 countries. They didn't have as many countries represented.
Still a lot.
Right, but they didn't have I mean, I wasn't there, but I would imagine it didn't have as much of a Latin American flavor. And even this year in Caracas, there were more Brazilians who were participating than Venezuelans, actually.
So describe for me what it's like. I mean, is it one big amphitheater or huge theater where all this is taking place? Or is it in multiple places like a college campus and you go from one building to the next? Physically, right. What is it like?
Well, the one in Caracas was distinct from the one in Brazil. And the one in Caracas happened in downtown Caracas, and it was spread out. It was mainly based around the Caracas Hilton, and then there are central parks nearby. And so you would have events happening in the Hilton itself, and there are different meeting rooms. Across the street from the Hilton, there was an amphitheater, and they would host events in there. There would be large tents that were spread out in different areas. And so basically, there were several areas. One was downtown. That's one I'm describing. And then Caracas has a pretty good metro, a subway system. And so you could take the subway and go to other places. And there was one place that I heard was really well set up where they had tents. They had internet access, but it was at their local airport for a military airport, actually. And it was pretty far removed, so even they had a great setup, the attendance was definitely a lot smaller than it was compared to the centrally located one. In fact, I never made it out to the Carlota Airport, but I heard good stuff was happening there. And I think I heard from people who had events there that it was sort of frustrating because you do all this work, but then because of the geography, it's hard for people to get there. But I think that's just going to happen when you try to get, 80,000 people, together at all these different meetings.
You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm speaking with my colleague Elizabeth DiNovello, who's been to the last two World Social Forums. We're talking about that phenomenon. Never having been there, I can only imagine what it's like. To me, the emotions running through my head are, wow, I bet it's exhilarating, and also it's probably exhausting, too. What was the best part of it?
For me, the best part actually was going to the American tent. Now, different countries had different tents, and the Brazilians actually had the best tent by far. They had little flowers and gardens and multimedia displays. And
what do you mean, little flowers?
They had potted flowers in their tent.
So it was
amazing.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it was beautiful. It was aesthetically beautiful. And then he went to the United States tent, which was just like a bunch of chairs and a table. And so we were sort of embarrassed, but it was really good because for the United States presence has varied over the years in the social forums, and this time people from the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign, which is a U.S. group that's fighting for economic justice here. They had people at the table at the U.S. tent all the time, and they really pushed this issue of poverty in the U.S. And I think Hurricane Katrina has put poverty back on the front pages here in the United States, but I think also it really made it clear to people in other parts of the world of that poverty really does exist in the United States.
And so there are people who just stream in from tent to tent. So
exactly.
Participants from other countries will come to the U.S. tent.
And there were different events that were organized. For example, the poet Luis Rodriguez had a poetry reading at the U.S. tent. But one day, the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign had a press conference about poverty in the U.S. And international press came, and they did this press conference. And there were a couple journalists there or people who were attending the event who had not been to the United States who were shocked to hear we had so many millions of people living in poverty. They were surprised to hear about the struggle people have when they don't have health insurance and how some people can't go to the hospital again this year because they've already went once. And
that surprises me because, you know, 35 million people in poverty, 45 million people without health insurance. Is there the impression by some of these, even these journalists who should be more educated, I would think, that since everyone here is, in the lap of the empire, that we're all doing great? Do you think that was the unstated assumption?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of what gets exported from the U.S. is Hollywood. And so, you know, people ask, well, we only hear about the American dream. And I think it's, look at what goes out in Hollywood today and what we don't see our own realities reflected in a lot of Hollywood movies. And in some ways, what gets sent overseas is the worst of the worst. And so I think that, if poverty in the U.S. just made it to the front pages of our newspapers recently because of Katrina, it wasn't being covered in the international press either. And so it may seem sort of strange, but to me, one of the most important parts of going to the World Social Forum was reminding me of the need to really cover poverty issues in the U.S. in the Progressive.
Was there a sense, Elizabeth Di Novella, that people from foreign countries who are opposed to Bush's policies have strong allies here in the United States? Is that one of the positive things, too?
Yes, and that was one of the things that was distinct from last year's social forum, is that the anti-war movement was really apparent here in Caracas. And by that, I mean Cindy Sheehan was there, Medea Benjamin from Code Pink, several Iraq war veterans who are now against the war, they were there. Pablo Paredes, who refused to serve in the Navy, who got sent to the Iraq war, who refused to serve. He is no longer in the Navy, but he's actually trying to take his case to the Supreme Court in order to be recognized as a conscientious objector. They were all being interviewed all the time by different press. They spoke at the opening marches. They really had a significant presence that they didn't have last year. And there was this man, Jeff Millard, who served in the Iraq War and came back, and he's against the war now, and he's involved with Vets Against the War. And he wore his desert camouflage jacket in Caracas, and he had a write on it. He had a stick on signs that said Against the War. And he said at first people were rude to him when they thought he was a soldier sort of parading around. But actually when people found out he was against the war, people were a lot friendlier to him. And I think that's the thing, too, that when you're in another country, people, at least that I've almost everyone I've ever encountered, always make the distinction between being someone from the United States and the actions that our government does. And so that was apparent there, too. And there was also, I think, a lot of people really wanting to support the anti-war movement here in the U.S. because a lot of people in other places in the world realize that it's not easy being in the belly of the beast, so to speak.
Cindy Sheehan, you mentioned, was there. Did you get a chance to hear her speak? If so, how do you think she did?
Well, I got to hear her speak the night of the opening march. They had this carnival-like parade. It was a lot of fun.
People in costumes and singing, dancing?
I shouldn't say not all of it was like carnival, but part of it was. But there was lots of costumes and a lot of posters, a lot of people. You know, the theme of the World Social Forum is Another World is Possible. And so you saw that sort of in English and in Spanish and in Portuguese, you know, throughout the march. But Cindy Sheehan and Sherry Honkala from the Kensington Welfare Rights Union and Medea Benjamin and I believe Lucius Walker, too, from Pastors for Peace, they were at the beginning of the march. And a couple of them spoke at the evening event. it ended at this military park, and there were all these different musicians played, and people from other countries spoke also. There was this group of women musicians from Argentina that they call themselves anti-imperialist reggaeton, because reggaeton is huge in Caracas, which was surprising to me. But Cindy Sheehan gave a talk, and she, in her talk, she said that, quote, George Bush is a coward. And she said that her son and other people's children were being killed by lying cowards in my government. And we need to end the war in Iraq and bring our troops home. And we need to hold someone accountable for the deaths in Iraq. That's what she said at the evening of the opening march. And, of course, she was very well received by the crowd.
She then was here in the United States. All we really saw in the mainstream media, though, was not those harsh but accurate words, but mm-hmm. her putting her arm around Chavez.
Right. A few nights later, Venezuela President Hugo Chavez gave a talk at an indoor stadium, and there were about 12 people on stage, and Cindy Sheehan was down there with Chavez along with other people. And he called her Camp Casey, which she put out in, but you know, the camp she created outside of Crawford, outside of Bush's ranch. He called that the Ranchito de la Esperanza, the Ranch of Hope. And so
the little ranch of hope.
Yeah, the little ranch of hope. But you know, Chavez was very friendly towards Cindy and introduced her. And
do you think it was a mistake for her to get that close? But the reason I ask is I'm watching Jon Stewart, and he's saying, Cindy Sheehan, wow, she's great. She wore that T-shirt at the State of the Union. But look, she's everywhere. And then he goes to this picture of her and Chavez, and he hits his hand to his forehead as though, you know, Cindy, why'd you do that?
Right. Well, I think it's a tough call. I think it's really hard to be on a podium with any politician and you've remained independent. I wasn't sure how it was playing out here in the United States. In fact, other journalists and I that night after we saw that event, we wondered what's going to happen to her, how it was going to be received here. But I didn't check the papers to see. But then the State of the Union happened, and so that sort of to overtake it. But I think more than anything, unlike last year, Cindy Sheehan really has become the face of the anti-war movement. And I mean, last year there war was going on at the World Social Forum, but the anti-war movement did not have the presence or energy that it did this year. And one last thing I want to say about the anti-war movement is that one of the criticisms of the World Social Forum is that it's just a place for people to get together and talk. And is that really enough? Like maybe, you know, some people say maybe there need to come more concrete things need to come out of it, maybe support for specific political parties or specific actions. And I think one thing that has come out of the World Social Forum was 3 years ago when we had the big February 15th march against the war, where millions of people all over the world marched. Well, that was because of the World Social Forum. Like, that really started happening there. And I think that's important to point out.
So you think that the criticism is not that well taken. The positive things come out anyway without everyone signing off on a specific platform for changing the world.
Well, yeah, I think that there are criticisms to be made, including maybe it's too big. I mean, like we were talking about logistically, it's huge, and you would go to one event and it would be canceled, and then by the time you wanted to get to another event, it would be too late. And so having learned that last year, I knew better than to expect everything to sort of happen on time. But, you know, stuff did get done. And, for example, I saw a Wisconsin activist, Hiroshi Kano, who is part of this group called Concerned Citizens of Newport, and they were this small group that fought against Nestle from coming in and creating a bottling plant and taking their water, essentially, here in Wisconsin. And, you know, he was at this event, and he met up with people in Mexico who are fighting the same company, who are fighting, and they're doing the same in El Salvador, and they're doing the same in Cochabamba. And so, you know, he thought the event was fantastic, and to him it was really energizing to be able to meet with other people who are involved in social movements that are similar and to swap tactics. That's sort of enough for some people.
I'm speaking with Elizabeth DiNovello, the culture editor of The Progressive, who has attended the last two social forums. Liz, you've written about Hugo Chavez for the Progressive. You talked about him a little bit just a minute or so ago. How do you evaluate him? What's your take on him?
Well, I came to the realization that it's hard to understand who Chavez is here in the United States, but in some ways it's just as hard when you're in Venezuela. I was in Venezuela in August of 2004 to cover the referendum on his presidency, and I wrote about that in the magazine. And so this is my second time back then, just in January and February of 2006. And Chavez is – one thing that is obvious when you're in Caracas is that Chavez has the support of a lot of people. He has, you know, been democratically elected a few times with about 60% of the vote and – each time, and one of his biggest source of support are the poor people in Venezuela, which make up like 80% of the population. And one of the things that he's done through the wealth created by the high oil prices is create education programs, literacy programs, medical programs, all of which are in poor neighborhoods and middle-class neighborhoods. And these are all things that really didn't exist before Chavez came to power. And so I think that that's very important to realize is that for about 40 years, there were two political parties that I've heard some people compare to the Democrats and Republicans who would switch. They would take turns, you know, being president every 6 years. And, you know, for 40 years, those governments didn't really invest in the people. And so you finally have a president that is actually spending money on social programs. And it's easy to understand why people support him while you're there.
And is it easy to understand why the Bush administration doesn't support him and has been saying that he's so anti-democratic?
Well, again, I think it's important to point out that he did win elections. But, I mean, there are – it's easy to level criticisms at Chavez, too. I mean, one of the first things he did is they rewrote the Constitution in 1999. But through that, they eventually he made the Congress, which had two houses into one, so it's unicameral. And now he has a majority in the legislature. And then a couple years ago, he began stacking the judiciary with pro-Chavez judges. And so, like many other parts of Latin America, you really don't have a strong independent judiciary. And unfortunately, it really is in many ways endemic to the continent. But at the same time, it's unfortunate that he took those steps to, you know, to not have the judiciary be independent.
What about the suggestion that he's cracking down on freedom of the press? Is there anything to that?
I was just going to move on to that. One of the things that happened recently was that this happened, I believe, in 2004. It was either 2004 or 2005. It was about this media law. And the media law, part of it governs how much local programming you should have. And so there was this push to have it not be overwhelmingly cultural, you know, songs and movies and television programs from outside of Venezuela. So part of the law, it's called the Law on Social Responsibility of Radio and Television. That's the name of the law. And so part of it governs what you can show, and most, I think about half of it is supposed to be Venezuelan produced. And then another issue is supposed to be, you're supposed to not air things that would be harmful or dangerous to children. And so there's that issue too. But I think what's more problematic, though, is that there was an already existing law that they strengthened. And this law said that you couldn't disrespect the president or other people in government. And, you know, maybe because I'm a journalist here in the United States, but that's the sort of thing that gets me really nervous. And so when they created this new social responsibility law, they strengthened this already existing legislation to include not only the president and government ministers, but also the attorney general, the public prosecutor, the human rights ombudsman, the National Electoral Council. And, you know, it's has a vague wording. And the problem is that I believe they've actually used it, but just a handful of times.
You know, from what you're telling, I'm sorry to interrupt. From what you tell me, though, I mean, these things are not certainly not to be applauded, but in the context of what, for instance, the U.S. government's been doing in violating people's human rights around the world, what Chavez is doing doesn't seem to be that horrific. Certainly not to justify a coup, which he managed to overcome in 2002.
Right.
Do you see the Bush administration overthrowing him again, trying to overthrow him again?
I don't. But that's partly because I can't imagine the U.S. engaging in another war right now.
Willing to bet.
What?
I said I'm willing to bet.
Right. However, while I was there, actually, the Venezuelan government threw out someone who worked in the U.S. embassy for spying. I spoke to people, Venezuelans, who were convinced the U.S. was going to invade. And, of course, they used the involvement in the coup of 2002 as an example of that. The one thing I want to say about Chavez is that he comes from the military, and the man likes a good fight. And I don't think he can underestimate that, because I think one of the reasons he talks so tough against Bush, which he does and which a lot of people really enjoy hearing, is because I think he's just sort of combative as a person. And I think you see that play out also in dealing with the opposition in Venezuela. You still have a free press in Venezuela, and I think, and I would like to hope to think that you will, but the fact that laws are being used against only a few papers for what they said, to me, again, he doesn't have a really strongly organized opposition right now, but he acts as if he does. And I think part of it is because the man likes a fight.
I'm speaking with Elizabeth DiNovella, culture editor of The Progressive, who has returned from the World Social Forum in Caracas. It must have been fun to be in Venezuela with Chavez there, interesting in any event, but also fun and interesting to be in Latin America at a time where there is this wave of new left-wing governments coming across the continent who are critical of the Bush administration and critical of the International Monetary Fund, critical of the World Bank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in Latin America, they call it the Washington Consensus. And that really dates from the late 80s when governments in Latin America were told, well, if you want loans, you need to privatize everything. And so
Clinton was big on that,
exactly,
too.
But that has not worked, and people have organizing differently, and they have models about how to include social programs and budgets.
And so in many countries, we have one left-wing leader after another.
Yeah, there's a wave in Latin America, and people are talking about it, and they're definitely very excited about it, too. It'll be interesting to see what happens next.
Were there posters or slogans encompassing all of Latin America?
Well, they had one poster that said that had Evo Morales from Bolivia and Kirchner from Argentina and Vasquez from Uruguay and Lula from Brazil and Chavez from Venezuela saying another Latin America is on the move. So,
well, we'll have to see. Yeah. Elizabeth DiNovella, thanks so much for being my guest today on Progressive Radio.
Thank you.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.